Welcome to the Hidden Potential Podcast. I'm your host, Homer Hargrove. And in today's special episode, you'll be listening to an interview that I had with a good friend of mine, Jared Moss. Jared is a pastor at the River Church in Searcy, Arkansas. He's occupied several different leadership roles and responsibilities in his 14 years of ministry experience. He has completed several different ministry and biblical education programs, such as 220 internship at Bethany Church, Destiny Leaders Institute, and Pastors University. Prior to serving in his senior leadership role at his church, The River, he was a local youth pastor for 7 years. He has also led National Youth Program for Destiny Leaders. He's married to Evelyn and has 3 daughters. In this episode, he's going to be sharing part of his story and how you should make yourself available for growth. Let's get started. How have you been, man?
I've been good, man. We just had a really good Sunday. We're experiencing kind of what feels like a fresh wave of momentum here at our church. And that's an exciting thing. My wife and I have been doing this young adults thing, and it's been growing, and God's been doing some really cool stuff. But finally getting settled in after the holidays. We've been in a season of fasting and prayer, and so we had a necessary slowing down of activity, and it's increased spiritual sensitivity. So no big things necessarily over the last several days, but times of refreshing, if that makes sense. So a really good time. Been good.
That's great, man. Yeah. Holidays are so weird, especially for church and ministry. And it's like, everyone has this, cultural, disconnect. It's like, it's like, we're just so ingrained to, get out of school. For winter break.
Absolutely.
But can you tell us a little bit about what it is that you do at your church, or even outside of your church? What are all the things that you're currently doing?
First off, thank you for having me, by the way. I was just elated when you asked me to do this. It was really exciting. So I'm in senior leadership at our church. Our church is called The River. We're in a town called Searcy, Arkansas. It's about 40 minutes north of Little Rock. Town's about 23,000, give or take a few. It's a county seat, so it functions like a bigger, town than that. We've got a college here. It's got about 6,000 to 7,000 members. And so when it's in, there's a lot of energy around. But my wife and I are serving in this senior leadership role. So essentially we're pastors, but my pastor and I, he's kind of a spiritual father to me. He's 62, almost 63. No, I got that wrong. He just turned 64. Time's flying. You know how it is when you have kids. But we're kind of in this co-pastoring season where he's obviously the senior pastor, but I'm preaching more off and on. We went every other week last year. I'm doing about 3 out of 4 this year and taking on a heavier preaching load. But pastoring at this church, previously, before I did that, we served as youth pastors for 7 years here. And basically how that happened, I was serving as a staff intern here for 1.5 years. We started up a new youth ministry. And then my pastor came to me pretty early on and was like, "Hey, I feel like you're supposed to take over this as the youth pastor." And I didn't want to do it, but my wife was like, "We're supposed to do it." And I was like, "Why are we supposed to do it?" And she's like, "It's what God's telling us to do." And I remember telling her, I don't want to be the youth guy. I just want to do something for the whole church. That's the way I put it. I want to do something for the whole church, not just the youth. And I remember her saying, "Well, the whole church needs a youth pastor right now." And I was like, "Dang, she's got me," So we did the youth for 7 years. Took me about 3 years to fall in love with it. And after 3.5 years, the next 3.5 years were the best 3.5 years. And we really experienced a little move of God. So whenever God was telling me it was time to release it and pass it on, I didn't really want to let go of it. It was kind of funny how that works. You don't want to start, but then you don't want to stop. But we let go of that and just kind of embraced an associate pastoral role over the last 3 years. And now just preaching and trying to be a source of some fresh vision, and as well as pour into young adults and just kind of do whatever the next thing God has us doing. So that's what we're doing right now, whatever needs to be done.
No, that's beautiful, man. And especially to see that journey, even just of being a youth pastor, being 7 years and then stepping into this role of associate pastor, to where it really
seems like setting you up for you know, more promotions as far as that goes. And I think that a lot of people, when they first are starting their path of ministry or leadership, they kind of envision that journey to be a lot shorter than that, to where they think, well, maybe I'll, you know, mess around for like 2 years and then I'll become the senior pastor. It's like they have a much quicker idea of what it's like. Can you kind of share what it was like at the beginning, like from the moment in which you realized that you were called to ministry or leadership per se, and what that very early journey looked like as far as preparing, or what that transition looked like?
So starting back from the moment I was called into ministry, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So if I go long, just stop me. I'm a preacher, so you know how it is. And not only am I a preacher, I'm a long-winded preacher. I was telling somebody this week that I was like, this year I'm doing something different. I'm manuscripting my sermons. I'm not reading the manuscript. I tried that. I can't do that. But I'm doing it. They're like, why? I said, I'm competing against myself because I preach too long and I've got to figure out where the problem is. And so without fail, I'm manuscripting 5,000 words. And I'm like, now I'm going 50 minutes every time. It's 5,000 words. So I've got to get to 4,000 words. And, you know, I'm trying to like dial it back, but I just have a lot
to
say.
I'm the same way, man. I had to do the exact same thing because I would go for an hour and a half without missing a beat. And it's just so natural to just keep talking. And I start breaking up my messages into whole series because I guess I'll just have to break it out more for you guys. But man, anyway, I totally understand.
Yeah, you're not lying. That's happened to me before. And somebody said, you preach a whole series and a message. And I'm like, well, maybe I need to do three messages instead of one. But anyhow, so going back to the beginning, then my call to ministry, and I know it's different for everybody, right? You know, when you grow up, especially like if you grew up in a Baptist background, there's an altar call to get saved. And then there's also an altar call to surrender to ministry and all that kind of stuff. For me, that wasn't my experience. You know, we go back to 220i at Bethany Church, that time Bethany World Prayer Center. It's where we met. But going back a little further than that, I was 16 years old. I came to this church when I was 15 because a friend brought me. I had been out of church for 2 years. My parents their marriage was on the rocks. We were going through a hard time. And I just enjoyed the church from the moment I came. I got involved in the youth group, but I was still totally living a double life. I thought I was saved because I prayed a prayer when I was 8 and all that kind of stuff, but my life never changed. I didn't want to get baptized. I was scared of what everybody thought, struggled with suicidal ideation, all this kind of stuff. There was a lot going on in the background. I was partying, that kind of stuff. So when I was 16, I basically was made to go to a youth conference by my youth pastor and our associate pastor at the time. And I caved. I'm like, fine, I'll get on the bus and go. And that youth conference was 220 conference at Bethany. Now, I'd never been to anything like that. There were 7,000 students there. The first night, I remember at the prayer meeting before the service started, I saw like a 19-year-old, just really cool looking dude. I mean, the dude had so much I don't know if swag's still the word. I'm not a youth pastor anymore, so everything's like 5 years old by the time I say it now. But you know, and he started dancing before the Lord. I'd never seen anything like that. And it just broke me. I began to weep and bawl because I cared so much about what people thought of me that something in my mind went, why is that guy so free? He can dance and worship. What is that? You know, it just broke me. So I just wept for an hour. Then the conference started. The whole week, God was just ministering to my heart. And the last night, these two interns came up. They laid hands on me and prayed for me. And they said, hey, have you been prayed for? I was like, no. And so they're like, hey, can we pray for you? I was like, sure. And, you know, they're zealots, right? They're the disciples. Like, should we call fire down and consume them? And Jesus is like, chill out, you know. They just laid hands on me. And they were like, fire of God, touch him. You know, just the most like Pentecostal sounding prayer ever. And I didn't know nothing about that. I also had seen people like falling down and stuff. I'd never seen anything like that either. So I didn't know that, you know, this is, if you're an Assembly of God person, this is where you fall down, you know. So I don't know anything about that. They just lay hands on me, and the presence of God, which I became very quickly aware that's what it was, came over me in such a profound way that it felt like 50,000 glorious electric bolts of lightning shot through my body. I don't know how to explain it. Like, my knees buckled, I hit the floor, and when I was down there, I couldn't get up. It's like a Paul on the road to Damascus moment for me. And immediately I feel, it's almost like a heat sensation. I feel this, it's like a hand just grabs a hold of my heart. And I didn't realize at the time, it took me years later to realize, I think I really got born again at that moment. I spent these years thinking I was saved. And then I was like, oh, I got filled with the Holy Spirit. But my life never changed until this night. And so now I look back, I'm like, no, I got born again, you know? So I hear the voice of the Lord, not audibly, but in my spirit, man, right? Say to me three things. He says, Jared, it doesn't matter what your friends think about you. It doesn't matter what your parents think about you. It doesn't matter what girls think about you. I know it sounds cheesy and dumb, but you know, as a youth, But the Lord says, I hear the Lord say, to this day, I can repeat it. He says, I love you. And that is all that matters. And I believed him. And in that moment, everything changed. The depression broke off me. The suicidal ideation broke off me. The fear of man broke off of me. Like all these things broke off of me. I spent 30 minutes down there weeping, crying tears of repentance and saying, Jesus, I'm sorry for my sin. I give you my life. I'm done running. I remember saying that out loud up there in the altars at the sanctuaries of Bethany North, just rolling around the floor. I'm done running. I give you my life. I'm yours. And I got up and ran around the building and was dancing like everybody else after that too. I went to my youth pastor. I was like, I want to be baptized Monday night at youth. Like, we did it. We got it done. And so, you know, I hear Corey Russell talk about, like, I got saved. Delivered and filled with the Holy Spirit all in one moment, 3-for-1 special. That was my testimony, right?
Right.
But I never had a moment where I was like, oh, I'm called to ministry. I just remember that from then I was like, I knew I was called. Like, I didn't know how to verbalize it, but I still for 2 years, you know, typical high school, maybe I'll be a doctor, maybe I'll be a lawyer, maybe this, that, but maybe I'll be a preacher. I just kind of had it in the back of my mind, like, maybe I could lead a youth movement. Maybe I'm supposed to do that. I never wanted to be a preacher before then. But after that week, what God did in me was so radical. And it's the first time also that I ever heard pastors and preachers that really related to me in a strong way, to the sense that I thought, I think I could do that. Maybe I'm supposed to do that. So for these next 2 to 3 years, I kind of had this, you know, or these 2 years, I kind of had this tug of war of what am I called to do? It was a process of just nailing it down. But I did get to the place after I started listening to a lot of preaching and being in a lot of prayer meetings and seeing God do a lot of miracle signs and wonders, where I thought, this is so real that for me, nothing else matters. And so I kind of sold everything and bought the field on ministry at that point. To use the Pearl of Great Price as an example, my thought was, God, this is the only thing I want to give my life to, is ministering and pastoring and preaching and leading and telling people. Really, not even that. I couldn't even get it down to like pastoring. I didn't want a pastor. I just wanted to preach. I wanted to tell people what God did in my life. And so my thought was, since everything else under heaven will just be a job, I'm going to put all my eggs in this basket. And if for whatever reason it doesn't work out, I'll just work a job. And that's where I came to peace with. So my next step that I figured was to go to 220i. It was an internship because I had been touched there and literally touched by interns, right? And that's when I had my moment. So I thought, you know, that's a one-year program. I want to go there. It's radical. It's, you know, all those things that appealed to me at that season. I want to do something radical. I want to do something different. Everybody else going to college. I want to go to an internship, you know, all that kind of stuff. I remember my guidance counselor, like, where am I sending your transcript to again? I'm like, oh, it's a thing. Like, if she's sending everybody else to, you know, Hendrix and, you know, U of A and all these different colleges, and she's sending mine to 220 internship or whatever. But I went, and of course, you know how 220 I was, you know, but we spent a year there. God really did a work in me there. And then I came back, and I was, you know, I was being faithful. I came back from 220 I. I actually went back for a second year program, but when I got there, God immediately just told me, like, I'm supposed to be home. That was a whole nother process of wrestling through, do I stay or do I go? But I came back home because my pastor said, I think it's time for you to come back home. I get back here, and that semester, I'm doing some Bible school stuff. That next year, I took a job working in a tax firm, and I did this while I was getting my transcripts together to go to college after all, because I'm like, I'm not going to sit around. I need to get moving forward in life. So I'm applying to Arkansas State virtually to do an Associates of Applied Science in Business, I think it was. I don't know. And my pastor calls me one day and says, I want to take you out to lunch. So we go to Chili's, and we're sitting there and we're talking, and he said, how would you like to do an internship this summer at the church? And I was like, yeah, sure. What is that? You know, what does that look like? He said, I 30 hours a week, we'll do 10 weeks and just do whatever needs to be done. And I was like, well, we've never had anybody do that I know of at the church. So I said, oh, okay. It's like an office internship. He's like, yeah, sure. I was like, okay, cool. I said, Okay, I'm in. I said, what do I need to pay? And I remember him saying, he's like, oh, we're going to pay you. And I was like, wait, what? He said, $10 an hour. I was like, and dude, for me, I'm like, let's go. You know, I said, I'm so used to spending several thousand dollars to go hole up in a dorm and, you know, stack chairs and stuff. And here I am, I'm about to make 10 bucks an hour for 30 hours a week. Like, I'm big stuff, you know? So I did the internship and really enjoyed it. Towards the end of the summer, he said, hey, I don't know if you'd like to do this, but I'd love to extend your internship by a year if you want. I said, sure, you know? So I did that. And in the meantime, again, I know I'm going long, but this might help somebody that's younger if they're got to feel like they're trying to make sense of their calling. In the meantime, I was talking to my pastor about how do you break into ministry? How do you kind of get moving in that direction? And he did the traditional. He got a bachelor's in accounting, then went to a formal seminary, got a master's in divinity, pastored in the Baptist churches, then planted a church. That was his path. He felt like my path was different. He said, hey, there's a man of God I want to connect you with. His name's Dr. Phil Brassfield. He's a pastor to pastors. And I think that he could help you chart a pathway into ministry. I said, sure. So next thing I know, I get a message on Facebook from Phil Brassfield. He's 35 minutes up the road in Heber Springs. And he pastors a network of non-denominational pastors that mostly came out of the United Pentecostal Church denomination. And it's grown from, you know, 50 churches and a couple hundred pastors to now it's like a couple hundred churches and about 1,000 pastors. It's pretty crazy what he does. It's pretty amazing. But he said, hey, Jared, I want to meet with you. And I was like, okay. So we went up there, we had lunch, and he offered me an internship. And I was like, what does that look like? He said, well, I know you're doing the thing at your church with Pastor Keith too. He said, so why don't we just split carries? If you're there Monday through Thursday, you can come up to our office on Friday and you can travel with me once a month. Cause he traveled, I think 40 weekends a year, preaching at churches, meeting with pastors and staffs and stuff. I said, sounds good. So I spent that year, not in college, nothing like that. I did their program. It's called Destiny Leadership Institute. Now it's accredited through SEU and stuff, but that time it wasn't accredited. It was just a Bible school, 2-year program. So they offered me to do my tuition as a stipend. So I started doing Bible school through DLI. I was working for my church Monday through Thursday, working for Destiny on Friday. And then 1 week in a month, I'd travel with Dr. Brassfield and basically be his Timothy and carry his bags and set up his table and stuff. And so in those weekends, he would just speak into me the whole time. We drive, we fly, he's speaking into me. And then we preach and he'd preach. And then I'd be at the table with him or in the green room with pastors after and getting to hear how they think, getting to hear what they're going through. And really just this providential type of proximity that I never could have asked for, just God opening every door. And at the end of that year, my pastor said, hey, if you'd like working here, I'd like to extend you to 40 hours a week. And I was like, all right, sounds good. And so I just kind of kept saying yes. And it's funny, I told a guy one time on a call like this that the way I got to this church is a friend of mine told me come get in his Civic on a Sunday morning when I was in my room at 9:47 and church started at 10. And I was like, okay, fine. So I got in a Civic and I told him, I said, what's true for my journey in ministry was what was true for coming to church the first time is somebody asked me to go with them and I just said yes. And I kept saying yes. And so I already told you when I took on the youth and all that, and that's kind of what got me to here. So, you know, a few things on that. Everybody's calling to ministry and leadership is different. For me, I didn't have this big, like, I'm called to ministry moment. I had a radical encounter with God that redefined everything I cared about. And because this is all I cared about, I just kind of kept following this journey. And here I am today.
No, that's such a powerful story. And I really resonate with your beginning moment. I feel like it was similar for me as far as I just felt like I found the best kept secret and just kept wanting to share it with others. And that really led me along to make the same similar kind of decisions. And what really sticks out to me about your journey into leadership and ministry as far as being able to be at the place that you are now is, one, being humble enough to desire to learn. But what really resonates is that you didn't just go to quote unquote Bible school through these different internships, but you were able to get hands-on experience multiple times. I feel like at each of those internships that you described, each of those school programs, that they were very heavily influenced as far as experience goes, when there's a lot of Bible colleges that do not focus on experience at all. It's just sit down, right, shut up, listen, and now read it back to me. It's very, very programmed like that. And here you are getting just hands-on experience. And the other part of your story that seems so impactful is how you had this great mentorship along the way, that you had these great relationships with people of God who had the experience to that you could witness, and when opportunity came, they could pour into you. And I think that those things alone are a big thing that young leaders miss on. Is like so many young leaders I've talked to, they want to go to Bible college to start reading the Bible. It's like there's not that. It's like their only desire is so that they could, because they're not disciplined enough to read the Bible themselves, and they expect to for opportunity to, in a sense, like fall in their lap during that time, and then they're discouraged when it doesn't. And I think that part of your story shows is that you have to have a hunger to where, regardless if you're in a Bible college, that you're desiring something. And in each of these places, the opportunity to get that experience was presented to you, and you still had to say yes. You had the opportunity to say no each of those times. Mm-hmm. And another thing that I see among young leaders is that they do not fully appreciate those kinds of opportunities. And there's so many young leaders that turn down opportunities to go witness experienced ministers minister because they don't feel like they'll get anything out of it. And they would rather chill out. They would rather have a rest day, have a mental health day, have a day to catch up on their, have a day that they catch up on their homework. And then they're surprised when they don't feel equipped. They're surprised when they don't have opportunity in front of them, but they neglect the very things that you're describing, being able to get the experience and be able to have meaningful relationships with other ministers who have that experience. Mm-hmm. And so I just see those things being so pivotal to your story and how you're in a place that you actually enjoy right now. There's so many leaders and ministers are in places that they hate, that they despise, and they're waiting for their big break. And they're thinking, woe is me. Everyone's against me. The world's against me. God, when's the season of the desert going to end? It's like, dog, you need to put in the work. You're not ready to lift anything because you've been neglecting this experience, these opportunities, and you're waiting for it to only come in the your magical moment kind of way. So I really, really, really resonate with your story. And with that part of your journey and where you're at right now from going about getting that experience, or even right now in ministry, what would you say has been your greatest obstacle?
That's good. That's really good. A few things come to mind. I want to say this to your point, on what you were talking about just a second ago, and then I can unpack that as I'm verbally processing. But Bible school is good. Seminary is good. You need Bible school. You need biblical training. I'm still in a seminary right now, just going slowly on a subscription model, just because I want to keep learning. Right. But electricians have apprenticeships. Some things are blacksmith apprenticeship. They're not a classroom. And I think ministry is that. Timothy's need Paul's. Timothy's need Paul's to take them, to cut them like he did, to say yes. And then if you look up Timothy, you may be pastoring the church at Ephesus one day. And Elisha's need Elijah's, Timothy's need Paul's, and God blessed me with a lot of them. And that's I think that's been the biggest mark of spiritual favor on my life that's helped me get to where I am. So I encourage people, say yes to the men and women of God that the Lord puts in your life.
Definitely.
That helped me a lot. Now, when you talk about the tests, I think it's different for everybody. You know, you look at the life of Joseph, he had several tests he had to pass. But I think the greatest test that he just kept coming into conflict with constantly in his heart was the test towards offense. you know, and it's the same for every leader. I mean, man, when I had a pride test when I was youth, because I got saved and I started listening to all these like hotshot youth pastors around the country that were building these big youth movements and ministries. And then all of a sudden I thought I knew better than my youth pastor. And then I had to come back to him later when I was the youth pastor and repent, because I realized he was actually doing a really good job. And I wasn't even doing as good a job in my early days as he was in that time. Like that was a pride test, right? Then the test of offense. When we were at 220i, for example, people have varying opinions on how that went, and some good, some bad, some ugly, some great. I think had a really great experience overall. I had a lot of great things that God taught me and spoke into me, and I listened and learned a lot, and I'm thankful for that time. And yet in the same time, you know, looking back in leadership, different things here or there and stuff, it was a constant test. It was a constant test of your pride, or like, man, I feel like I've got an injustice being levied against me, or this or that, all this kind of stuff. And some people, you know, everybody's journey is different. Some people may leave, that kind of thing. For me, I knew God called me to be there, so God called me to stay there. And because I stayed there, I feel like I got the best of that. But then the next year, God did call me to leave. God was literally calling me to leave. And I had a problem where I started running my mouth about the program I was in, and I got rebuked, and rightly so. And, but I came home and God patched that up too. It's a really amazing story what the Lord did there. So I stayed when I was called to stay. I went when I was called to went, right? I called to go. I didn't stay because I was being told to stay, and I didn't go because people were trying to stir me up to go. And I believe, this is my conviction, blessed is the man, right? He who is planted in the house of God shall flourish, right? If a tree that's uprooted repeatedly will not bear fruit. The greatest fruit-bearing trees are right next to the river, no pun intended, because they have the most nutrients, and they stay the longest, and they're the tallest, and they bear the most fruit, right? And so I saw a tree one time being transported down the highway, and this guy was going like 40 miles per hour when the speed limit is 75, and the root structure was wrapped up intact. And the Lord said, when I move you, it's like that. We're going slow, and we're not doing it many times, because I want you to bear fruit wherever you go. So staying power is one of the biggest things that God's given me in grace, but it has come with multiple opportunities towards misunderstanding and massive offense. You know, I had some of my best friends in the world. At one point, they felt called to leave the church several years ago. But, you know, me and Evelyn prayed about it. We felt called to stay. And that was difficult. You know, we had to work through that, but we did. And God's blessed them, and God's blessed us. And that's difficult, though. You know, usually, you know how it is, relationships, the strength of church is relationship, and the weakness of church is relationship. It's not a weakness. It shouldn't be. But, you know, those kind of things are difficult because everybody loves each other and wants to stay together forever, doing the same thing forever. But seasons change, and God does move people. And so that was kind of a hard thing to navigate in our mid-20s, is we had people that we love. They're like, hey, we're going to go over to this church now. We're going to move and work for this ministry and stuff. But here we are. We're staying. And that kind of thing. That was a difficult test. But I feel like we passed it, because I feel like we were called to stay. But it wasn't even about in that moment. I'll tell you this, Homer. God told me on a fast back when I was 21, I was praying about it. And I told Evelyn, I still have it in my journal somewhere to this day, where I told her, I said, I think the Lord just asked us to consecrate our 20s to the river. She said, what do you mean? I said, what I mean is make a quality decision that we're going to be here till we're 30, no matter what. And just trust that God's going to reveal what he has for us in our 30s when we get there. And we prayed about it, and we just agreed. Well, that was easy to say at 21, but at 26, it was difficult to uphold. And then again, about 3 years ago, went through another kind of thing like that, very difficult to uphold. And then that's not even including, I had an offer come in one time from a mega church that wanted me to be the young adult pastor, and they had multiple campuses, and, you know, it would have been more money and just things like that. Right. And I felt like, man, that's a big platform, you know, and you know how it is when you're in your own church, just like your own house or family, you see everything negative. So you look through the Instagram lens and see everything positive at the other church. And I prayed about it, and we just didn't have peace. And we're like, no, we're supposed to stay. And so the ability to stay in and out of season, especially in times of testing seasons or misunderstandings or disagreements, has been the biggest test for me, and the yeah. and the ability to not be offended if people feel called to leave, you know, to release, you know, and not get into this whole, well, I haven't blessed you and all kinds of, no, it's just, I bless you in the name of the Lord. And then watch, and you watch them flourish, and you're flourishing, and everybody's flourishing. It's just not how you imagined at the outset. Those have yeah. been the biggest tests for me personally, but I hope I'll find out on Judgment Day. I hope I've passed the test, but I am overall very glad that I stayed.
You know, I think that speaks a really powerful testament to enduring and faithfulness. And I think that that is a huge obstacle for so many leaders, especially young leaders that are in a sense antsy to do something meaningful early on. And just like you're describing, it's like it's one thing when you're staying through offense, but it's another thing to stay when there's other opportunities. Like, I think that yeah. might even be harder to endure than offense. And what I've I feel like, not being raised in church myself, I have been surprised at how many churches grow by offering other people positions, and how many churches I don't want to use the word steal people. People have the right to go wherever they want. I'm a big proponent that right. you should go to wherever you want to go. But what I have found is that so many young leaders, exceptionally young leaders, end up going off of this hope that this other church sees potential in me. Mm. And maybe they finally I'll be able to step into what I feel like God is calling me to do, because this church is telling me things I want to hear. And then they go, and it ends up being either empty promises, not what they expected, or the same problems that they've been experiencing and that thought were going to go away. And it leaves them confused, and it often leaves them even offended at church in general. And I think that how you're describing this idea of faithfulness and enduring and not being so antsy to get up and go to whatever opportunity comes, I think that that is a really powerful secret to unlock early on in leadership, to where you will, when you show yourself faithful, you will find exceptional opportunities. And I've said it myself. I really believe that the only reason I became a youth pastor back in the day was because I just kept showing up long enough. I just kept showing up to move chairs, and I outlasted like 3 different youth directors. And they're like, well, let's just use this guy until we find someone more qualified. Like,
it's that's just how it works, man. That's funny.
And just that simple act of faithfulness provided opportunity for me. And so many young leaders, like I said, will go to where they think that this opportunity is, and then they're disappointed. So I love that about endurance. Hey, listeners, today I'm reaching out for your support to keep our journey of innovative Christian leadership alive. Every week, we dive into territories of faith-based leadership because of the contributions made by people who believe in this mission. Whether you want to help us by becoming a monthly supporter or by submitting a one-time donation, you help fuel our discussions on authentic and practical leadership. Your generosity allows us to help other leaders just like yourself harness their creativity for the greater good of our communities and beyond. As a monthly supporter, you can submit questions and comments to be shared on the show each week, and you'll also get weekly shout outs on air for being a member. And if you become a super supporter, you will receive a monthly free product from our online store. To support us, please visit homerhargrove.com and look for the support section. It's quick, it's easy, and every bit of it helps us to make greater impact to Christian leadership. Thank you for being a part of our mission. Now, let's get back to today's episode. With that being said, what would you say now is something that you're most proud of when it comes to your leadership?
Yeah, so I'm proud of my spiritual sons and daughters in the Lord. And that sounds weird coming from somebody that's 32, you know, like my biological kids are, you know, 8, 5, and 3. So it's like, what are you talking about spiritual sons and daughters? But there's no age in the spirit. And and you can't do this unless you stay put long enough. You know, everybody glamorizes, you know, that it's like that saying, like, what if I fall? Oh, but darling, what if you fly? And everybody's like, oh, step out of the boat when he calls you. And that's true. Step out of the boat when he calls you. But you also need to stay in the boat if he's not calling you out. And both of those are examples of faith. And so you can't have spiritual sons and daughters or a posterity or inheritance of the Lord if you're always moving around, right? So over 7 years in youth ministry, God gave us an inheritance in spiritual sons and daughters. In 2018, back to one of the seasons I was just telling you about when, you know, there was some misunderstanding, Evelyn and I were massively discouraged. And I remember I had about decided that it was time for us to hand off the youth. We had been youth pastors for about 3 years at this point, I think, three. And I had it all planned out. I knew who I was going to give it to and all this kind of stuff. And I remember we went to a conference in Dallas, and then I had arranged, who's now mentored me, a meeting, a luncheon with Pastor Joel Stockstill, because he was there and I reached out and he was willing to meet with me. And me and Evelyn were sitting with him and his wife, and we were kind of telling him, you know, our hearts. And I had this grandiose idea that, oh, I'm probably going to pass off the youth to this person and this and that. And then I think we're going to plant a church. Now, remember, I told you, God told us till we're 30 no matter what, but that didn't mean we didn't struggle with that. Like, maybe I didn't hear correctly. You know, you have those moments. So I had this grand idea that we're going to go plant a church and, you know, in Little Rock, and it's going to blow up. And, you know, I'm probably going to be the next Stephen Furtick. Just a bunch of dumb stuff, you know.
Right, of course. High,
you know, everybody loves me. It's going to be amazing. So it was so spiritual. I dressed it up and I just told him everything and he listened. And I got done, and I'm this is going to sound funny. I really expect him to be like, wow, man, that's awesome. He just kind of stared off for a second and he just said, no. And I remember thinking, I was like, wait, what? He's like, no. He said, you're defeated. He said, you're bummed out. You're discouraged. You're weary and you're defeated. And you're not even done with the youth ministry. He said, Jared, you haven't even peaked the middle of what God has for you in this youth ministry season you're in. He said, you need to go back to the prayer closet and you need to get some fresh vision and come out with a burden, because you still have more in the tank and you're not done yet. I was like, okay, you know, all right. Okay. Got it. Not done yet. Got it. 2 weeks later, we have a little youth conference that I put together, and a man by the name of Eddie James, he's a worship leader, brought his ministry in. On a Thursday morning, we have less than 100 kids in the room, and I feel dumb because Eddie's like a, you know, internationally known worship leader. And I'm like, man, Eddie's in here, and we got less than 100 people in the room. Like, I felt so dumb, you know. I told him, you know, hey, just do your thing, just whatever. He gets up there and starts praying, and like 40 minutes later, he starts leading worship. Because he just kept praying. And I don't know how to explain it. The schedule went out the window. Heaven came in the room. The spirit welled up in that room so strongly. The glory of God was just present, right? And it just went boom. I mean, people are laying hands on people. And I'm watching our youth just get wrecked, man. They're 16. They're 15. They're praying. They're crying. They're praying in the spirit. They're having these encounters with God. And then Eddie stopped and he said, I'm sensing something in this room that I've not sensed since the beginning days of the ramp. Now, I don't have to get time to get all off on the ramp, but it's an internationally renowned youth movement in Hamilton, Alabama. And it's a great place in many ways. I've been blessed. But it started with a group of teenagers praying, and now they're all the leadership there. And 500,000 people have come through that room in the last 5-10 years, right? So Eddie says that. And I'm kind of blown away by that prophetic word and that exhortation. But I'm standing on the side of the stage and the Lord's just completely just doing away with this whole you're done thing. And he's like, look at these kids. They are ripe for harvest. They're ready to roll. And God said, Jared, you've spent the last 3.5 years trying to build a platform for you to stand on to preach to hundreds, but I've made you to be a platform for these guys to stand on to preach to thousands. That's literally how he said it to me, right? And because I did the hotshot youth group thing, like, we're going to give away a pair of AirPods and junk, and we have 200 kids coming. And I tried to do hype youth ministry, and it just left me wanting. So after this encounter with the Lord, all I really ever wanted to do was have prayer and stuff. I just kept putting it off. One of the guys that got touched in that encounter in our youth group, his name is Joe. He's 16. He comes to me and says, hey, I was wondering if when we start school back, we can start a Thursday morning prayer meeting at 5:30. I'm like, 5:30 a.m. on a school morning?
Here's the keys, kiddo.
Yeah, I'm like, exactly.
Go read
right?
it yourself.
And I said, why Thursday? He said, because that's the day the glory fell at the youth conference. I'm like, fair enough. I'm like, I know how this is going to go. Day one is going to be me and him. Day two is going to be me. And day three, it's not going to be either of us, right? So I said, sure, I'll meet you up. So the first day, he brings 6 guys. Then the next week, there's 8. And then the next week, there's 12. And then our girls were kind of checked out at that time. Like, our guys were kind of on fire, but our girls weren't. So I started praying for new girls. Now this is crazy, but Jesus is like, new wines for new wineskins. I'm like, God, send us new girls. Kid you not, we have this campfire night, and a car pulls up, and five teenage girls get out of it that I've never met. I take that back. I've met one of them. And they start coming to prayer on Thursday morning, and they're all about it. And one day I look up, Homer, and it's 5:30 a.m. on a Thursday, and we have 27 teenagers there on a school morning to pray for revival. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we've got something here. We ended up having 36 kids come on a Thursday morning every single week for a while. And there's still a group that gathers to this day. That's been years ago. So I went the opposite. I got rid of the monthly hype night. I got rid of the weekly service. I actually went to just Monday night prayer. After, and we had Thursday morning prayer, Monday night prayer. I would teach leaders, and then we would do prayer. And then the leaders would go, and they'd do Bible clubs in their school. So we ended up having 300 students come to our campus clubs because these youth that got touched in this youth conference started praying and crying out to God were getting equipped by me. And then they'd go out, and they'd preach, and they'd lead. And it ended up just being this really special season where for the next 3.5 years, man, we had so much fun. We raised up like 19 leaders. We went to the beach together. We hung out together. Everybody, it was never ending hangout. They had a blast. They'd go do ministry together. They started serving in the church. We did this summer intern program where they would read their Bible every day. We do class twice a week. I teach them doctrine and theology. We do evangelism. We do prayer meetings. We did outreach. We did, they served everywhere in the church. And they ended up getting this well-rounded Bible, hands-on ministry, mentorship, prayer, evangelistic, and campus club outreach experience. All right, here's the fruit of that. All these years later, that 16-year-old kid is now married. He's 22. He's one of our worship leaders, and he married one of the girls that got out of the car that night. Wow. All right, the guy I passed the youth ministry off to is now 25. He's married with a kid, and he's married to one of the girls that got out of the car that night. One of the guys that plays bass at our church, he's married to one of the girls that got out of the car that night. Like, all these young ladies ended up marrying, and young guys ended up marrying, and now they're the worship, you know, they're a worship leader, they're a youth leader, they're a kids leader, they're everywhere. And it's like they're our kids. And now they have their own kids, which is crazy. But in hindsight, I'm not enamored by the crowds and the numbers and the events. And we had a lot of great things that happened, but I'm grateful for my inheritance in them, because children are like arrows in the quiver of a man, right? Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of the arrows in the hands of a warrior. These guys are arrows, and they're doing a lot of great in the kingdom of God. And when I look back, I'm most proud that we went deep with a few rather than trying to aim high for a lot. And what we built is lasting. So that's what I'm most proud of, by God's grace.
That's such a powerful testament to how meaningful it is to make disciples, authentic disciples, and to be concerned, especially like for youth pastors. So often a youth pastor's goal is to grow the youth group to X amount of attendance, is to create a bigger platform so that a bunch of teenagers think that they're really smart and are cool. And the reality is that that is so short-lived, and it often they're just simply not that cool. End of the day, they're not that smart, and they're not that cool. And their crushing of heart for ministry is really just a crushing of their ego. But to hear this realization of, like how you described, that's not about building your own platform, but building a platform for these young people, I think that is a really big takeaway for young leaders to have their hearts checked and go to the place to where to see that ministry is not about you, but it's about others. And it's weird that it has to be said, but especially like in our generation today, to where the idea of being an influencer is the number one desired job among young people. To be a social media influencer. And they use that same concept when it comes to their Christian faith. I remember one time I asked this young kid about what he wanted to do when he grew up. And he said, well, before I gave my life to Christ, my dream was to become an NBA player. And I was like, And like, I suck at basketball and I think I could beat you. But he said, now that I'm a Christian, though, it's everything has changed. Everything has changed. Now I want to be a Christian NBA player and use my influence for God. It's like, dog, that is the slimiest thing to ever say.
Everything has changed except nothing has changed.
Yeah, your ego has only gotten bigger in the fact that now you believe that you can trick God into using you to help him out. It's foolishness, but that's so often what we make this idea of influence out to be. And for you to come to this point to where truly see the genuine soul that you're talking to, the souls that are within your stewardship, and realizing that their salvation, that their longevity is actually the biggest thing to be proud of. That's a powerful testimony. And
amen.
With that thought, what would you say, what is one question out of the 14 years that you've been involved in ministry, what is one question that you wish you would have asked earlier?
Man, that's a really, really good question. Like ask the mentors in my life or like who would I have asked that to for context?
A question, like if you were to say someone your age when you were just starting out, mm-hmm. early 20s or even an 18-year-old, and they're just starting out their path of leadership, and but that's you, and now you're looking at your future self. What's one question or what's one piece of advice that you would give to that person, that young person that's just starting out?
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, several things come to mind. I'll phrase it. I'll kind of go for the answer direction because I think you can work back to front and probably arrive at the question people should be asking.
Yeah, you can make it in the form of what advice you would give to someone starting out, if that's easier.
I'll tell you this. The number one thing that I can say with conviction and experience to somebody starting out is just assume you're wrong about a lot. Stay humble. Be faithful. Honor, up, down, all around, especially those in authority, especially elders in the faith, and listen to them. Eat the fish. Spit out the bones. Don't uncover their nakedness when you find it, because you're going to. Nobody's perfect. But thank God for the people he's put in your life to correct you, mold you, encourage you, inform you, and trust that if you'll be faithful to them, then God will do something amazing in your life over process. And stay planted till transplanted. That said, the thing that I would tell somebody on the 14 years later is this: reading your Bible and praying every single day is the most important thing you can do, more than anything else. Draw near to God and God will draw near to you, because when you get successful, and you will, at something, maybe even ministry, especially if you're faithful, especially you honor, and if you're gifted, you'll find like that Christian, the influencer everybody wants to be, right? You could have 1 million subs on your YouTube and you'll still be wanting. You can have 500 people coming to listen to you preach. You'll still be wanting. And you could have 5,000 coming to listen to you preach, because there's always a bigger fish, and you'll still be wanting. The only thing that satisfies, and ironically is the only thing that qualifies, and ironically is the only thing that will sustain you, is reading the word and praying. And if I have any regret, and maybe it's not a regret, it's just, I think Billy Graham said this at the end of his life. He said if he had to do it over again, he would disciple more than he would just preach to crowds. And I believe God made him to preach to crowds, but he would disciple more. But more than that, he would just read his Bible a lot more and pray a lot more. And I honestly, I've missed it in seasons. I've gotten off track. I've gone days or weeks without it at different times. And I look back and I think, man, how much more satisfied would I have been in the Lord? And yet how much more impactful would my ministry have been that he's given me if I would have cherished the reading of his word and prayed at a consistent daily, much higher level. And so I think the question that young people should be asking is, what is the most important thing? And it's the Matthew 6:33 principle, which might be my life verse. And it's attached to my testimony. It's this: seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all things will be given to you. And so I would say the right question is, what should I do? And the answer is, seek God without fail. You'll fail, but seek God with consistency through the reading of his word, the meditation on his word, and praying back his word. And he and you will not. I would say this: if you'll do that and obey what he says in his word, you will not miss your calling. You will not fail on your destiny. You will find that you will wake up immediately smack dab in what he's called you to, doing what he's made you for, if you'll just seek the Lord in reading the word and praying every day.
I love that, man. And I think so much of the essence of what you're saying is surrounded by the concept of humility. And I think that, especially in leadership, so much of leadership can easily turn into an ego. And I think the most toxic leaderships within churches, as well as within secular workplace, is the ones that have toxic egos at the forefront. And just these encompassing egos where it's all about me, and humility is just that killer of ego and pride, and realizing that you don't know it all, pretty much no one knows what they're doing. We're all just trying to figure it out. But yeah, to know that you don't have it all together, that's okay. But that gives so much room to grow and to put God above all else. I love how you phrase that. Let me ask you one last question before we wrap up today. And that is, what is the greatest change that you've made as a leader?
The greatest change. You're talking about a personal change or like a ministry change, like a...
Whichever you feel like would be best fitting.
The best change I've made as a leader. Well, I'll answer both. Why not? The best personal change that I made as a leader is getting serious about personal development and growth. I never even used to think about that till several years ago, where I realized you can literally read books and watch YouTube videos and be smarter and wiser with money, with time management, with presentation, with your dress, with your attitude, the way you talk to people, these kind of things. Character wins the day. And so if you can grow in your character, and if you can grow in your productivity, then you'll be massively successful. And so several years ago, I got on that train. Now you have to be careful, because that can be like the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Like it doesn't give you spiritual life, but it helps. And so I would say, from a personal change, give yourself to productivity and self-development and growth and getting coached and equipped. That's been the best personal change that I've made as a leader. The best change I think that I've contributed in the kingdom of God and ministry is encouraging. Really, it comes out of my testimony, what I've done here in ministry. It's the reason I started leading a youth network for several years for Destiny and different stuff like that. It's encouraging people to think cross-generationally, up and down. And it's first honoring those that are above you, understanding that you can't receive what they have, disregarding the things that you don't want from them, because everybody's got good and bad, right? But honor those that are above you, but then invest in those that are below you. And I'm not talking about in value. I'm talking about in season of life and generations, right? When I was a youth pastor, the youth were below me as far as age and that kind of thing. And quit living for the moment, live for the next generation. So invest, and you will reap a harvest in due time if you do not quit. Youth pastors, quit focusing on just having the best Wednesday night service. Focus on raising up young leaders. Do that, and your Wednesday night service will thank you and be even better. the movement will be better. And you may end up having 100 kids right now, but if you raise up 5 or 6, you know, leaders, you may end up, you know, by default reaching several hundred throughout the years later. And so I'd say my greatest change that I've made in church and in ministry is encouraging, equipping, and empowering leaders to invest in the next generation in ministry and integrity.
That's great, brother. And I really love this idea of being conscious of the younger people. And a lot of churches neglect those generational gaps. So many churches that I know, and where there is no attention, it's like children's church is babysitting. Youth is just so that the parents can go to the service. It's like, it's all just trying to shuck the next generation into something so that the real people, the adults, can come in and have a Bible study and start tithing. Like, that's what it's really about. Money.
Yeah. And they give money, they pay the bills. So yeah.
Yeah. Let's just focus on them and go take care of these kids. And what you said about personal development being that personal change, I think that so many people just regurgitate what they say when it comes to listening to podcasts or YouTube videos and so many young people do not know what they're talking about. And mm-hmm. when it goes as far as character, I think that that's like foundational thing is character. Mm-hmm. But if you do not grow in practical management, self-management, your character won't be able to shine. It won't be necessary because you won't be able to handle anything. And there's several churches and ministers and pastors I know to where the pastor has amazing character that I would aspire to, but terrible management skills, terrible practical leadership skills, to where they end up becoming the cap to their church, where they cannot grow past the pastor because mm-hmm. they just are not able to develop themselves in this managerial way, with like practical skills, and knowing that you can, one, grow within yourself, but even if you realize that you just suck at certain organizational skills, of getting someone to partner with you to help, and knowing that character is more so what sustains you, but that management and practical leadership experience is really what helps you get started. So I think that's a really powerful concept that you're sharing. And Jared, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this show with me. I think that what you said was so valuable, and I got to tell you that it's been such a long time. Was it 12 years, 13 years since we've seen each other, since we've seen each other face to face. But even when I first met you and being in that internship with you all those years ago, you were always such a kind person, and which says a lot. I really mean that in a very empathetic way, because for me, not being raised in church, once I started going to church, I felt like there was gang members that treated me nicer than some of the people in the church. And you were a person that was genuinely kind, and you had a caring heart for others. And I just got to tell you, that is a commendable thing to have. And I'm so proud to know you as a friend, to see the work that you're doing. And you're just doing an amazing job, brother. And I'm so grateful for you doing the show with us.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate that, Homer. You know, I'm tearing up here thinking to hear you say that, because maybe this is a bonus thing, and maybe this is something I should have said instead of, you know, what advice can you give or whatever question. But my dad told me when I was a kid, I told him every time I couldn't go anywhere, gas station, Walmart, don't matter, without somebody saying, Hey Ron. And I'd always say, you know him, because he knew everybody. And I said, Dad, why does everybody know you and remember you? He said, son, do this. He said, be nice to everyone you ever meet, and they'll never forget it. And if you ever need something from them, they'll be there to help you. I remember saying that. And kindness is free. Being nice is easy. And if you can be kind, then then God will reward it. And for you to, out of everything you could have said just then, to say that to me, that brought that memory back to me. And that's a real blessing. I appreciate that. And I'll say the same for you, man. When we connected there, I remember you, for whatever reason, I remember that you were a little more tucked in, might be the right word. Like, even in the way you dress and stuff, like, you presented yourself very, very like not haughty, not like uppity, not like that. Just you were serious. You were not there to play around. Like, you were there to fulfill your obligations as a 220 intern, to learn what you came to learn, and so well presented. So that when you told me your testimony, I remember thinking, wait, you, like, that's where you came from. And it was a big blessing to me. But yeah, man, we had a great friendship, and that was such a great season. But we will see each other again face to face. I have no doubt about it, man. And I'm just thankful, out of everybody that we graduated with and everybody that I've connected with over the years, there are a handful of people that are still rolling, still faithful, still going and building the kingdom of God in various contexts. And you're one of them. And I just want to honor what you do, and with your church, with this podcast, with your family. And I just look forward to when we get to hang out again in person, man.
Definitely, brother. And it means a world for you to say those kind words. And I'm just so glad that we were able to reconnect and have this time together to share some insight for really the next generation, like you said. So again, thanks, Jared.
Well, there you have it. I hope that this episode was meaningful and edifying for your leadership and your growth within your ministry and organization. Could you do me a favor? Could you leave a rating and review for this podcast? It'd really help me out and help others be able to see this show in their feed. You can also visit homerhargrove.com to be able to learn more, connect, or become one of our supporters. Until next time, have a great life.